Board will come to order. Good morning. Welcome to the 1,329th meeting of the Board of Directors. We will begin, as we do with our meetings, with public comment. And I believe we have two people signed to speak up. Madam Secretary?
Yes, sir.
I believe the first is it Omar Kareem? To be followed by Corey Stiansky. For Kareem here. Once, going twice. All right, then we'll move to the second speaker. Is Corey Stiansky here? I hope I pronounced that correctly or somewhat close. If not, you'll correct me.
Stiansky?
Yeah. Stiansky.
Board members, Mr. Manager, my name is Corey Stiansky. I'm a candidate writer of Infrared for the change of litigation. I'm meeting this morning to urge you to approve favorably the changes in use restrictions to permit food items to be sold on a lot of property adjacent to Metro Rail Station, in particular, at Chase Road. As you know, Maryland National Capital Park and Planning proposed, and Montgomery County Council has been accepted, a revision to the Shady Grove sector plan that will bring speaking the area around the Shady Grove station to the Urban Town Center style connecting Metro Rail to the city's transit grid and an ever increasing bus user volume that grows at a higher rate than branch. In 10 years, there may be as many as 8,000 new residential units and 7,000 new jobs within walking distance to Shady Grove station. I stand prepared to introduce a proposal for Enterprise, a coffee and donut shop, and an unused storefront adjacent to the Shady Grove station in a Metro-owned garage. However, staff cannot favorably review my proposal, much less act on it, without guidance from you that may open the possibility to such use, even in Title IV. At a time when this board has recently revised your joint development guidelines to invite more proposals, and in pursuit of various opportunities to raise revenue without aggressively rising this seems to be a good time to strongly consider sales of food on Metro property outside of reservations, in particular, growth, which uniquely is about to experience the most dramatic change surrounding a rail station in many years. Welcome the opportunity to work with you and staff to create a model retail store we can all be proud of. Thank you.
Thank you, Stiansky. Are there other speakers? That's all we have. Okay, there's no one here who signed up, thought they signed up for it. Let me just address Mr. Stiansky's question. Mr. Cato, just a couple of years ago, but before you came here, there was an effort to provide retail opportunities near our stations, which, to my knowledge, has not really borne fruit. I know as part of the discussion, the question arose about the sale of food items. Of course, no one has contemplated changing our policy regarding food within the system. And I think everyone here understands the reason for our ban on food, which has existed from the opening of the system, although that is not the practice followed by transit agencies elsewhere. But we do have a cleaner system and avoid a lot of problems. And I think that that policy is one that board members have continued to support. But there was the question about whether outside the station it might be permissible to sell something that perhaps couldn't be brought in, but people are on their way home, that kind of thing. There are obviously a lot of issues involved in that question, but I don't think we ever brought them to a resolution or concluded discussion on that at the board level. The last I remember is that staff was continuing to try and get some kind of opportunity for some vendors to provide, again, you know, some retail presence at certain stations, and I think then we got taken up with other things. So unless somebody remembers something differently than I do, I believe we've kind of been left with that as an unconcluded item. Do I remember incorrectly, or is there something I'm forgetting?
Yeah.
Mr. Bottingheimer?
You remember correctly, and we can come back with you with more details of the reactions we've gotten from the retail community, but essentially that this is one of the more profitable areas of the businesses that they would want to propose, and we haven't found anything that we or they thought would make sense without the food component. So, excuse me, that's where we are at this point. We can come back to you with a review of that in more detail if you like.
I assume that at some point that this might be a matter before the Planning and Development Committee or the Operations Committee, I'm not sure, but one of our committees presumably will have a discussion of this and whether there's an action item or not. So, look forward to seeing that. Thank you. Any other board member comments or questions? If not, we have before us the agenda that has been distributed. Are there any changes, or is the agenda acceptable as it is? If there's no objection, we'll accept the agenda as presented. Hearing no objection, the agenda is approved. We have also before us the minutes of the meeting of March 27th. Are there any corrections, additions, changes? If not, is there a motion to approve the minutes as presented?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Second by Ms. Hudgens. Motion by Mr. Benjamin. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The minutes are accepted as presented. The next item is the report from the Riders Advisory Council. The chair of the Riders Council is here this morning, Ms. Iacomini. We, of course, have a written report in front of us as well, but thank you for joining us.
And my remarks will follow here. RAC members, riders, lots of folks, particularly when dealing with emergencies and service disruptions, both on rail and bus, riders want clear, consistent, and concise information that can allow them to make informed decisions about how best to complete their trip. Well, my leadership is hearing this and understanding it, and in our April meeting, Deputy General Manager Gerald Francis, along with Rita Davis and Dan Epps, gave some presentations highlighting some possible draft ideas and changes that might happen. They outlined improvements, some of which are implemented, such as giving radios to station managers, and some which are still in the works. They talked about some ideas that RAF itself had put forward over the past 2 years, including pre-marking locations around rail stations where bus bridges would queue if they were needed, and providing station-specific maps outside the pay area that assists rail riders in making choices about maybe crashing an existing bus or walking to another station. And I gotta tell you, that's not always the case. You hear one thing at courthouse and a different thing at Clarendon about the same incident. Increased information provided for bus riders. We really need to get back to the next bus service. I know that's being worked on, but people found that very helpful. We need to ensure that service disruptions are announced on all rail lines, particularly on trains serving major transfer stations, since people use more than one line in their journey. Provide maps and stations to use when service is disrupted, as I had said, that indicate walking distances to other stations. Renew efforts to provide more visible signage on rail cars and rail stations concerning prohibited actions such as eating and drinking. I know Mr. Zimmerman just talked about that in there. I know there's another audible announcement about that. But there, one of the RAF members actually got us encouraged to talk to someone, and the person said, well, there's no sign that says I can't. So I think we need a renewed effort with that. Although that's not emergency communication, it's something that's helpful. We need to make sure all of our communications are accessible to riders with all manner of disabilities, whether it's blind, low vision, or hearing impaired. To that end, we need to continue to explore technology to assist riders with disabilities with motion-activated announcements, which I think we'll see coming with Metro Channel, as well as using some cell phone-activated messages. We should test the public address systems and train cars to make sure before leaving the rail yard each morning, announcements can be heard in every car in the series. I know that Mr. Kubitschek's been working on that and trying to keep 1,000s with 1,000s and the rest of it. But I found on trains where there's a mix of cars, sometimes there's an announcement in one car and not in the others. And I just think that's an interoperability problem. Continue to upgrade the public address systems at rail stations and test the ones already upgraded, both at the mezzanine level, the train level, and all of them, because the sound is different in areas, and even some of the ones that have been redone, it's difficult. We are working on a work plan, Mr. Zimmerman. We've had RAC staff talking with WMATA staff, figure out some of the projects and ideas they're putting forward, and try to see if it's timely for RAC to comment on them before they become a draft or when they're a draft, and also to come up with some of our own initiatives. RAC is also very pleased that we were invited to Tuesday's display of various types of new prototypical hard flooring in rail parks. Some of us were able to take advantage of that. I think that was about three of us, and it was It was really great. I think those of us who were there were fine with the harder flooring of the type in the first two cars. But we're really anxious to see what and hear what other riders have to say. Draft subcommittees have been busy as well. We heard a presentation about capacity at the rail committee, much as your committee heard this morning. And we're really very anxious, though, about this possible either enhanced yellow line service or a change in blue line service. And it's still unclear to us how the public is going to be asked for comment on that, how that's going to be working. Actually, staff at our meeting couldn't quite answer that either. So I think we could need to work on that. So all in all, it's been a busy month, and we look forward to many more. Thank you. And if you have any questions, let me know.
Thank you, and thank you for being there. I guess it was Tuesday. Also, the chair of our E&D committee, Mr. Sheehan, of our Elderly and Disabled Committee, also was there. And I think it was a good opportunity for a number of us to see. Mr. Benjamin also came out and to see what is being looked at for a new flooring. I think we came to the same conclusion you did. This does have good possibilities for us. I particularly appreciate your work on the communications issues here, on customer communications. And your report does contain, as you summarized, about, I don't know, 10 or a dozen or so specific recommendations. This is something that is on the manager's work plan for the year. And I would like to ask Mr. Cato, I assume that at some point in the not-distant future, we're going to be getting some presentation from you on at least some aspects of this and kind of where we're going. And presumably, we'll take into account some of the input we've got now from the Riders' Council on these specific items.
Look at this working. A presentation to you in June. There's many efforts underway, some that have been implemented, others that we're planning on implementing on certain dates. So we will be back with an updated report.
Thank you. And I would ask that when you do make presentations, you know, whether for the committee or whatever, that staff be asked to specifically address the particular recommendations that came from the Riders' Council.
Absolutely.
Now, you know, you may say, yes, this was a good idea and we're doing it. You may say, we can't do this for some reason or we wouldn't recommend doing it. But the important thing is that you respond to it in one way and explain, you know, how you've taken into account whatever the point was that they made.
We would do that.
Thank you very much. All right, that will move us now to, I'm sorry, will the board members have any questions on the Riders' Council report? If not, the next item is the chairman's report, and I just have a couple of brief items. I want to note that in the meeting this morning in the other room, I mentioned that we've had 3 days this month over 800,000. Sorry, I said 2 days, but it turns out there's actually been three because we just had another one. So on April 23rd, which was yesterday, riders took 803,802 trips.
Wow.
That's 3 days that were basically ordinary weekdays in April in which we've had over 800,000 riders. Now, you know, there may have been a baseball game or a hockey game, something going on, but it's not, you know, most of the big ridership days used to involve presidents, living or dead, you know, inaugurations, funerals, things like that, or, you know, the descendants of, you know, hundreds of thousands of people descending on the Capitol for some kind of national event. We are more and more finding that the top 10 days are ordinary weekdays. And that shows, you know, the continued trend. The fact that it was done successfully is something to be pleased about. I think since the last time we were here, you've had a couple of extraordinary days, though, in other ways that we had much planning for, the opening of the baseball stadium and the visit of Pope Benedict. And, you know, I'd have to say that there was much trepidation. I think there was anxiety, maybe too strong a word, but a little tension within the building here about being able to gear up for that. And there was much anxiety. I can't tell you how many people asked me, you know, is Metro going to be able to handle this? Is Metro going to be able to handle this? You know, I'd have to say that the system performed quite well, which means that the 10,000 men and women who work for you, Mr. Cato, performed quite well and once again rose to the occasion. And I would like to take this opportunity to thank you and the people who work for the authority for the job they did. And showing not only our system, but our city to best effect when we were on a national stage.
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Hutchins.
I just wanted to echo that because I think many of us heard from constituents, neighbors, friends who participated in those events, some who had not been transit users before, and the experience was pleasant. unexpectedly pleasant by some that might say so, but what it did, I think, is develop that relationship with Metro, that it's a positive, efficient way to travel, and it, I think, bodes well in terms of how our transit usage goes up by experiencing what Metro does and does well in these special events so that people become really regular users, and I think that really goes a long way for us.
Mr. Grant.
Thank you very much. I do want to echo those comments. You know, I'm sorry to be a little late, but I was at a press conference with the mayor of the District of Columbia.
Oh, that mayor.
See, you learn things. You learn things. Even at an advanced time in life, you can learn things. But anyway, oh, thank you. But I just wanted to say on behalf of the District of Columbia that how enhancing the whole Metro role has been and continues to be with our various sporting activities, particularly at the new ballpark. And also, of course, what happened with the papal visit, where I believe Metro WMATA transported some 26,000 people, something on that order, which was, I think, better than half who attended that papal mass. Mm-hmm. And so that's terrific. And I just want to add, more parochially perhaps, that the role that Metro WMATA is playing in Columbia Heights is absolutely astounding because, Mr. Chairman, we were anticipating gridlock traffic and all manner of problems relating to automobiles. We built a 1,000-car garage, which the retailers insisted on us doing, which there are not too many 1,000-car garages in the District of Columbia. I don't know about the rest of you, but what we are finding is that the 1,000-car garage is being underused. We haven't even opened up the second level, and that is a direct result of people using their legs and feet to walk to this retail center, but it's also a direct result of Metro WMATA, and if you've said this, forgive me for repeating it, but I want to say it as a commendation, that Metro WMATA's ridership in the Columbia Heights station on weekends, both green and yellow lines, has increased on the order of 26% compared to the year previous. And so that's a phenomenal increase. And the really good news is that we don't have the pollution, the congestion, the gridlock that we were all kind of braced for on our comparatively narrow streets in the District of Columbia. So as we deal with all manner of details relating to Metro WMATA, and I recently had my budget hearing with Metro WMATA, we're not quite finished yet, but with all the issues, But as we delve into all those details, you don't want to forget these really larger achievements that are occurring to such great satisfaction, at least in the neighborhoods that I'm privileged to represent. So I thank you, Mr. Cato, and as our chairman says, your 10,000 staff people who help you out every day for these great achievements. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll be brief, but I want to thank you at a very personal level because we obviously worked very closely with Metro, and if Metro did not perform as brilliantly as it did over the many events and the many days, obviously you'd be hearing a lot of me talking, explaining what happened on those days. So, one, I want to thank the Metro staff and thank them all for their work, not just on those days, but really the weeks and months and even years before those events, planning with the city for those events. So, kudos, hats off to all of you, and thank you for your really extraordinary efforts.
Thank you.
Let me also note, because we were discussing, you know, the need to be able to continue to accommodate what seem to be ever-growing numbers of riders, and I talked this morning about the fact that 6 years ago we made that commitment and made the decision to commit a lot of funds to purchase more rail cars and upgrade the system so we could begin turning 4-car trains into 6-car trains and 6-car trains into 8-car trains, which is now a vital part of our ability to deliver 800,000 people to and from where they're going. Looking forward, the challenge is not only that we can continue to provide the rail cars so that we can get to that 75% 8-car trains and 100% 8-car trains at peak times that the general manager and staff were talking about. We have another problem, which is the last time around we were starting off with 600 or 700 rail cars that we have at the point there, I guess 700 something, moving toward the around 1,000 that we have now. But going forward, we have not only to augment the size of our fleet by buying new ones, we have the oldest cars in the fleet, which are frankly going to be expiring as they come on to, you know, to the end of their fourth decade of service or whatever it'll be. And we're already seeing that the oldest cars in the fleet show it. And let me say that this morning on my way here, riding on, you know, in peak times, the car I got onto, you know, was between 8:30 and 9, so it's a full train, of course. But I stepped on through the door, and there were about three seats completely empty right near the door. Why were there empty seats in rush hour on a rail car? Well, because there was water dripping from the ceiling and splashing all over the floor, so there was a large area of our carpet all wet. And obviously nobody could use that. Everybody was standing away from that space. And people on the train were warning people as they came in to come off it. That was, Mr. Gator, by the way, car 1274, if you want to check on that. You'll notice the one, which means it's a Roar car, one of the original cars, which is to say it's probably over 30 years old. And those are the cars that, you know, are we're going to be in a situation of deciding, you know, what to do about them. But the useful life of a rail car, you know, you can stretch it so far, but we've, in all the time I've been here, established a life of something like 35, 40 years as the maximum, I think ideally 35 years with a midlife overhaul. We've done midlife overhaul on the 2000s and the 3000s, and they look like new rail cars. These cars are going to be at the second half of that. They came in when the system opened in the middle of the 70s. So we need to figure out not only how to buy more rail cars to enlarge our fleet, but what to do about 300 rail cars that are, you know, that are getting to that age in which it's just simply going to be harder to keep them in the kind of condition that riders expect. One last item to mention, and that's an event that's happening this Tuesday, April 29th. It's a pedestrian safety workshop called, I believe, It's Time for a Change, I think is the theme. Metro is co-sponsoring this with the Council of Governments, is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, and it will be... I believe it's at the National Press Club.
Press, yes.
Yeah, beginning at 8:30 on, no, I'm sorry, it's Tuesday the 28th or the 29th? Somebody help me.
29th.
It is the 29th, okay. So I said it right the first time. There will be 200 experts in the field who will be on hand along with regional transportation leaders to talk about problems to the, you know, the pedestrian safety issues that we face around the region. It is something that is obviously of great concern. We've had some well-publicized cases, a lot of not-so-well-publicized cases. We do, in fact, need more people to be walking. It's a good thing to do both for our environment and for personal health, but people have to be able to do so safely. In this region, we're suffering up to 80 pedestrian fatalities a year. And, of course, there's a much larger number of people injured in various ways. And then there's the question of who doesn't become a pedestrian because of safety issues. So we have to deal with this. And we're hoping to help promote that through this event. So I'd invite all board members, if they can, to consider attending. And we look forward to seeing folks next Tuesday, beginning at 8:30 at the National Press Club. Anything to add to that, Mr. Cato?
No, it's just, again, it's just an example of Metro getting involved in the issues that impact this region. Anything concerning mobility is our interest, and especially pedestrian safety. And I'd like to thank our employees who've worked on that. I believe this is going to be an important program that can have a big impact to this region.
Great. Thank you. And I believe you have appointed a new chief safety officer.
Yes.
Who needs to take an oath.
Right.
Will Mr. Ronald Keel please come forward at this time?
He's coming forward right to the center. Yes, sir.
All right. I know I'm going to get the picture, but let me give you this. Come on over here, sir. How you doing? Have you been over this already? You know the drill here? Okay, well then, what I need you to do is raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Ronald A. Keel.
I, Ronald A. Keel.
Do hereby solemnly swear.
Do hereby solemnly swear.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
And the provisions.
And the provisions.
Of the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority Compact.
And the provisions of the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority Compact.
And that I will faithfully.
That I will faithfully.
And impartially.
And impartially.
Discharge and perform.
Discharge and perform.
All duties incumbent on me.
All duties incumbent upon me.
As Chief Safety Officer.
As Chief Safety Officer.
Of the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority.
The Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority.
According to the best of my ability.
According to the best of my ability.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. That will take us to the report of the General Manager. Mr. Cato.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a very brief report. I'd like to thank you again for your comments concerning the efforts of all the Metro employees put in over the past few weeks. And I'd like to thank them for their outstanding efforts. But I'd also like to thank our customers on Metrorail, Metrobus, and Metro Access for their patience. Our customers had to deal with crowds and delays due to street closures related to the Pope's travel, but everybody kept their cool, and they helped this region, in my judgment, shine in the global spotlight that we received in this historical event. I'd also like to thank the chair of the Riders Advisory Committee, along with members of the Riders Advisory Committee, who gave us very good advice of how we should prepare our customer communications. And one example of their advice was to develop and to include a special pocket guide for the event, which was offered in three languages, English, Spanish, and French, as well as other special notices on our buses. And I'd also like to thank those individuals who volunteered at the various stations, including Director Benjamin, who served as well in giving directions to our customers and helping this event be the success that it was. And so, Mr. Chairman, that is really my presentation for today. To thank the public, to thank you, to thank the board members, and to thank our employees for all the effort over the past few weeks. While this morning we do have an employee spotlight, because of the time delay, the employee is not here, so we'd like to bring this back next month, Mr. Chair.
Very good. We'll bring it back next month then. All right, we move now to committee reports. The first is the report of the Customer Service Operations Safety Committee. Mr. Graham.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I am pleased to report on the meeting which was held April 10th.
I'm pleased to report on the meeting that was held April 10th, 2008. We, as will be our custom with this committee, is we will have at every meeting, as the first order of business, we will have operational performance. And in fact, we have enhanced those reports because I think this oversight role that we play on these very important issues is extremely important. So that in the future, beginning at the May meeting, we will also have monthly report on crime statistics because this is the committee with oversight over public safety. We will be comparing FY08 crime to FY07. We'll have a report on security cameras. We'll have a report on the span of NTPD's jurisdiction to enforce the law, on the ability of the transit police to enforce the law. We'll have a monthly safety report and a report on installation of revised elevator escalator signage, which is improving, by the way. I've actually had emails, believe it or not, from people who have said they really liked the new sign. And this one occurred in a suburban station, and the other occurred in D.C. Two separate emails saying, we'd like to read this. And so that's a very positive report to my mind. But at our meeting on April 10, Mr. Francis provided the committee a briefing on the FY08 year-to-date operational performance indicators, including rail and metro access, on-time performance, bus mean distance between failures, bus failures by fleet, rail car failures by delay times and vertical transportation reliability. We did request additional information for vertical transportation to include detailed failure data and associated hours for those escalator elevators which we are identifying as chronic problems, as frequent problems, which we want to examine, and a chart identifying all escalator elevators that have not been functioning for several weeks. So, Mr. Chairman, it's not going to be my practice, unless you want me to, but I don't think you do, to go through all the details of the operations report, because we will have done that at the committee level. But every month we will be doing this, and if there is an exceptional matter to report to the board on, I would like to have your permission to raise those issues.
Of course.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Grant.
Mr. Chairman.
Sorry, Mr. McKay.
Yeah, since we just finished talking about the crime statistics and the safety issues that were raised at the last committee meeting, I did want to take a brief moment to commend our chief and also our public safety officials for the recent investigation and work that was done to apprehend those responsible for vehicle theft and tamperings, particularly at the Franconia Springfield Station, among others. I think it goes a long way with our customers. Some folks at the end of the line particularly feel like they've been disproportionately hurt by fare increases and parking increases, and they continually ask me and others, you know, what do they get for their additional money? And some of those folks have actually come forward and said that they certainly appreciate the police work that was done and feel like they're getting something for that. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. McKay. I'd like to recognize Detective Captain David Webb, who was instrumental in making sure that we apprehended the suspects.
Thank you. Good work. All right. The next report is the Finance Administration Oversight Committee. Mr. Benjamin. Thank you, Mr. Benjamin. Finally, the Planning, Development, and Real Estate Committee, which met this morning. Ms. Hutchins.
Thank you. Committee met this morning, and the following action items were referred to the board by the committee. The Royal Street Relocation Project was presented by staff, and it establishes a project for the replacement of Royal Street Bus Garage, establishes a $4.3 million project budget, and authorizes a task to P2D for the alternatives analysis and public hearing process. And, Mr. Chairman, I would move approval of the relocation of the Royal Street project.
Ms. Sudgen moves approval. Ms. Hewlett seconds. Is there any discussion? Mr. Benjamin?
I believe that there was going to be an adjustment to the language. Has that been made? It has been made.
Okay. So the adjustment reflects the discussion in the committee. Okay. Anybody want to take a quick look at that and make sure they're comfortable with it?
That's
fine. Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. There's a minor edit in the clause. All right. If there's no further discussion, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? That motion carries.
The second item was the policy concerning the use of WMATA property on non-WMATA transit projects, and staff brought to the committee a policy that allows the no-cost transfer of Metro-owned real estate property to local jurisdictions and state government for reimbursable and transit projects, and to apply any sale proceeds from the land transfer with non-governmental entities in connection with these projects to be particularly reimbursable on or transit related projects. And the resolution that is attached reflects the changes there. Mr. Chair,
Ms. Hutchins, we did vote to defer this policy, did we not?
It is to be deferred with a language amendments to it. Yes, not an approval. The action item is to the deferral.
Did I
say approve? No.
I thought you. So do we actually need to defer it in here for something that the committee deferred? The committee, if the committee is not offering it for action, then I don't think we need.
It was deferred. Okay. Yeah. It was deferred.
Graham has a question.
Yes, sir.
If I may, in excessive caution, as we're deferring this, which I would certainly support, could we also have a brief statement as to how this new policy relates to the surplus disposition?
Yes, actually.
To a jurisdiction?
Mr. Graham, that's a good point. I think you had to leave, and I asked specifically that be part of the presentation we get when it comes back. Good point.
The other item was the sale of the Roslyn Bus Alley, and that is a sales agreement with the JBG company for the purchase of the Metro Bus Alley at Roslyn Metro Station, and it's an Arlington County project for the Roslyn Metro Rail Station, and I move approval.
I'll second that. This is just to sum up briefly, will allow for the continued use of the alley within what will be a new building as it is today to facilitate our bus movement, but also provide funds for the enhancement of the station through what is effectively a new entrance with three high-speed elevators that will be needed to accommodate the growing load at that particular station. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Opposed? That motion carries. Next item.
And the item on Florida Avenue developer selection was deferred for, and it's a 60-day come back within 60 days, not less than 60 days.
Yeah. All right. Any further items? That
you
report?
And the final one is the you mentioned earlier is we had a briefing on metro capacity and ridership growth, and that is a very critical part. The information was very important, and I think for our general public, it outlines for us what the expectations are for growth and what the funding challenges and capital needs are for this region. And I think as we look at this, it's very important that we look at it in terms of how the growth capacity will be impacted and the challenges that we as a region will face over the next years. We have had Metro Matters that comes to an end, and this deals with growth and beyond that, and I think those capacities are very critical. We just spoke of what we were able to accomplish doing the three significant events that it cost increased ridership. We would not have been able to get there without the Metro Matters piece, and I think what we're looking at is how do we get to the needed capacity for the system as we continue to grow, and there continues to be a demand on transit use.
Thank you, Ms. Hudgens. Item 11 is administrative actions. There are five this morning. I'm going to take them sequentially today because there are some questions about several of them. So the first item concerns a request for approval to enter into a contract with Aon Consulting for employee health and welfare benefit consultant services on a sole source basis. Mr. Cato?
Yes,
by those services. Again, we will go out, should the board approve that today, and bid future contracts for these type of services.
Thank you, Mr. Cato. Mr. Benjamin has a question.
In this, you refer to a retiree drug subsidy program. Is that a subsidy that the authority would receive from the federal government?
Yes, it is.
And do we have some ideas about how much that would be?
We get about $250,000 a year, and there's about $10,000 worth of charges that we have to incur to comply with Medicare's rules in order to get that $250,000.
Okay, and this is going to be a savings in 2009?
It's an ongoing savings, yes.
Okay, and is that already in the budget, or is that yet to be saved?
No. I don't know.
No, we've not recognized that in the budget.
All right. Just another question. Is this going to result in any changes whatsoever to our retiree drug benefits, either in terms of the benefits to the retirees or the cost of the retirees?
This is independent of our program design, except that we have to have a program that is at least as good as the Medicare program in order to be eligible for the subsidy.
Okay. Thank you.
Do you have a motion?
Yeah, I move approval.
Mr. Benjamin moves approval. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Graham. Just a quick question. Does this action then reduce our OPEB liability? or what will flow from it? Will that reduce our OPEB liability for retiree health benefits?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Thank you. Further discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Opposed? Motion carries. The second item is a request for board approval to initiate and award a competitive contract for the procurement of professional and technical consultant services for a mystery shopper program. Mr. Cato.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, as it's discussed with my goals for this year, the authority feels the need to bring in an outside service just to test all of our operations to ensure that we're meeting the expectations of our customers. And this contract will allow us to begin the mystery shopper program later this calendar year, and it's a 3-year contract with 2 1-year options, and it's pending approval of the FY09 budget.
This is an item when I advocated for it. I think I called it a secret shopper program. I think at some point I heard somebody talk about mystery rider. Here it's being called mystery shopper, but I think it's the same basic concept, which is something used frequently in the private sector, a lot of retail, large retail businesses who send folks out to basically have the experience that a customer would have and report back and say, you know, how things are working and provide that kind of look that you don't get if the general manager or someone else in authority walks in. It's not quite the same environment that might be there on a day-to-day basis. And it's important that the agency know kind of what it is the customer experiences and look for ways in which improvements can be made, changes that need to be met. So I think this is important in terms of achieving our overall goals for customer service. Question, Mr. Benjamin.
I laud everything you said, and the thing that I question here is we have in the past had a mystery rider program, and it was done with volunteers among our riders. We're now proposing to spend $1 million to provide effectively the same thing as I think we did in the past with volunteers. What is it that we're getting now that we would not have gotten with trained volunteers who would report to authority staff?
I'm going to ask Sarah Wilson, Director of Communications, to respond to that question.
Sorry, we did have a volunteer program in the past. The problem was that the results that we get are not reliable or valid. I mean, what happens is you get on your X2 bus, and every day you give us the results of the X2 bus, but there's no broader perspective on what's happening in the rest of the system. And then with volunteers not being trained, you get a variety of subjectivity with regard to the customer experience. And so, you know, it was a free program and we got what we paid for.
Yeah, I think, I think this is really a different kind of program than, things that were done before. And there's a reason why businesses that have a lot at stake do pay to have this kind of thing done. And you get the kind of systematic information that Ms. Wilson's talking about that will allow us to make systematic improvements, which I think everyone agrees needs to be our focus. Are there further discussion?
Just a question.
Ms. Evans.
I agree that I do. If we're going to do this, we really need to do it with a seriousness. And have we set any measurements or objectives that we're looking for from that? Because I hope what we get back out of it, we can put back into the system to ensure that we know what we're improving and why we need to improve it.
Yes, and there's no point to doing something like this if you're not committed to being a proactive organization. And so what we were going to be doing is be taking a look at what we're getting back and feeding that directly into our operations staff and a very tight relationship that we'll be having with them as this program continues.
And you do or will develop the objectives?
Yes, yes.
You have?
That'll be part of the scope of work that we'll be doing, yes.
Mr. Linton?
What's your timeline?
Let me defer to our consumer research staff.
We hope to have the contract awarded by the beginning of fiscal 09 and hope to have the inspectors in the field probably by late August at the latest.
And I gather you're still working on the statement
work? Yes, sir.
Further questions? I'll move approval of this item. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Ms. Hudgens. Any further discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. That motion carries unanimously. Thank you. Item three is the request for board approval to enter into a standby trust agreement that includes trustee indemnification by WMATA. Mr. Cato.
Yes, this is a request for indemnification. Actually, the heart of the matter is that we're required to have funding available should there be problems with underground storage tanks, and we're recommending to the board we do this through a letter of credit. This is new. In the past, we've had a reserve, an operating fund reserve, and that has served the purpose to have money that was not obligated to some other expenditure. However, we don't have the reserve this year, so we're recommending that we do this line of credit.
Ms. Benson.
If I hear you correctly, Mr. Woodruff, what you're saying is this is something we've not done in the past, and that was a question that I had. And the reason we did not do it in the past was we had sufficient funds in reserves so we could commit them, and at this point we do not have those funds.
Yes, sir, that's exactly right.
So this is a cost that we incur because we drew down our reserves?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I move the item.
Mr. Benson moves approval. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Ms. Hudgens. Discussion. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Item four is the request for board approval to execute a short-term loan agreement. I'm sorry. I forgot to turn my microphone on that time. This is a short-term loan agreement for up to $100 million with Wachovia Bank. Mr. Cato, is this Mr. Woodruff's item also?
Yes,
Mr. Woodruff.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Last February, we came to the board and we asked you to increase the commercial paper limit for our Metro Matters program, which you did. And roughly a week after that, the commercial paper market pretty much dried up. So we did explore that further, but found that our lending institutions could not provide the money necessary to meet our cash flow. So what we're proposing today is that you allow us another option to do a short-term loan of up to $100 million. We anticipate we would get an interest rate in the 3.5% to 4%. There are some costs. There's a setup cost of $25,000 and a closing cost of $20,000. But based on the advice of our financial advisor, this is the most economical way for us to move forward at this time.
Ms. Benjamin.
Mr. Woodruff, thank you for that explanation. If I understand correctly, it was the collapse of the auction rate securities that then drove the commercial paper market.
Yes,
so
sir.
That we were no longer able to borrow in that market.
That's correct.
And so what happened was a lot of other municipalities suddenly entered that market and dried it up. Is that right?
That's exactly right.
So what we're facing now is the potential that the commercial paper market will reopen, the potential that we might want to borrow some more, either directly. Can that be done domestically, or would we have to do it offshore? Beyond this $100 million,
we certainly could look at that. What the strategic plan would be that we have the commercial paper. If that opens back up, if you approve this, this gives us the short-term option. What we need to look at, and we're doing this with Mr. Kesnick, our financial advisor from PFM, offshore is an option. We need to position ourselves for a long-term borrow, potentially in the fall. We're going to start that process, and because of the volatility of the markets, my recommendation is we have as many options available to us as reasonable.
That sounds very good. In order to maintain that flexibility and ability to move in any direction and in the kind of market, do we need to do any approvals for you to look at all three options and have all options available?
No, sir. We have the board's approved budgets for our financial advisors and bond counsel. We have that approval, so we are able to move forward. And of course, as we've discussed before on these borrowings, as we approach this, as we begin to know how much money, projected interest rates, maturities, and I'm estimating this is now looking into the late summer, early fall, we would return to the board. We would brief you on all those items. As you're aware, in the Metro Matters, there's an option for the localities to not participate in a borrow. We have to give them a 45-day window to say they want to provide money up front. So all those items would come back to the board, so you'd be fully informed of the process.
Mr. Woodruff, I appreciate this is a very difficult time to try and figure out which direction to go, and I appreciate the fact that you're moving in multiple directions at once, since any of them could change at any point. I move this item.
Motion by Mr. Benjamin.
Mr. Chairman.
Do I have a second for the motion?
Yes.
Second by Ms. Hewlett. Mr. Grant.
Yes, let me just understand. First, you have identified the financial advisor. Could you just say who that is again?
The name of the firm is Public Financial Management.
And they have been our financial advisor for some time?
Yes, sir.
How much time?
Four years.
4 years. And the reason that we are doing this short-term borrowing of $100 million is to accommodate our cash flow needs?
Yes.
Relating to capital?
Yes.
Relating to capital?
Relating to capital, yes.
And so that once we issue the bonds, we will be able to reimburse this loan.
That's exactly how it would work. Yes.
So we need. And how long will it take to issue the bonds?
The short term or long term?
Long term until the long term. You say this, yes. Until the long term borrowing is put into place.
And. Today's thinking is, and again, this depends on the markets a great deal. Today's, and this is working with the financial management advisor, that we would return to the board in the fall we would be prepared to do a long-term borrow if the markets are such that we would go in that direction.
And so how long of a period will we be properly accommodated by $100 million?
Well, this primarily would meet our needs through the end of the fiscal year. And then, of course, in July, we will get the jurisdictional contributions to our capital program. And then in August, we should get an infusion of federal money. So this is to get us through that period of time, the end of the fiscal year.
So this is really just through June 30th,
yes,
we're talking
sir.
About.
Yes.
And without this $100 million, what would happen?
We would not be able to meet our cash needs in the capital program.
To what extent?
Looking at cash flows, I don't think we'll use the full $100 million. I would say $70 million.
So projects would have to stop?
Yes.
Is that the consequence?
Yes, sir. Payments on projects would cease. We'd have to shut down projects if we don't do this.
Okay. Thank you.
And if I might just add, the reason we're back on this is because, as I mentioned early, at the time we came to the board in February, the commercial paper market was very favorable, interest rates of 1%. So, you know, we were headed down one road, and that turned very quickly after the board approved it. So that's the reason for the change in course.
Very good. Further questions? There is a motion. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. That brings us to item 5, which is request to approve, I believe it's an MOU, to provide Arlington County with access to Amana facilities to fuel Arlington County compressed natural gas buses. Mr. Cato?
Yes, sir. Arlington County has a bus facility adjacent to the 4 Mile division that we operate, which is a compressed natural gas facility. They have buses that also use compressed natural gas, and they have asked that they could fuel their buses at our station in lieu of building an entirely new compressed natural gas station. We have the capability and the capacity, and we're requesting that the board approve an agreement with the county that we provide the fueling for their buses, and it's a dollar for dollar. For every dollar of expense, the county will reimburse us with cash for those costs. So there's no real cost to the agency, additional costs, nor any additional personnel required. And this is a win-win, as I said. It's an opportunity to maximize the dollars spent in public transportation in the region by sharing of facilities.
Questions? I'll move approval. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Benjamin. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. That concludes the administrative items. Reports. D.C., Mr. Graham.
Thank you very much. As I mentioned, we had our committee at the council had the hearing on the Metro Ramada budget on the 18th, which was last Friday. We have some unresolved issues, which we were working through with the Department of Transportation and Ramada, and so it's still in the budget process. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Graham. Maryland, Mr. Benjamin.
No report.
Virginia, Ms. Hudgens. No report. I'll just say we're still waiting on a special session of the General Assembly to deal with our transportation funding, including dedicated metro funding, and we are hopeful. The governor indicated he still does envision calling a special session within the next couple months, hopefully before the spring ends. We have an executive session following this meeting on four different items as identified in the agenda, and I move the board meet in closed session to discuss labor issues with respect to Local 689, labor negotiations, personnel issues, and contractual issues with respect to automated fare collection systems consistent with board procedure Roman numerals 6.C and 6D. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Benjamin. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. We will convene an open session following the closed session. We'll certify the closed session, and if there is any action to be taken coming out of closed session, we will take it at that time. Thank you very much. We're in recess.